Welcome to Dakota Midday on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm Carl Gerke. Coming up later this hour, Sioux Falls musician Jeremy Haig joins us in the studio. Jeremy and his brother John and their band are getting ready for this year's holiday jam concerts. But first, thousands of Native American Trust landowners could see a $1,000 check in the mail before the end of the year. The money comes from a $3.4 billion settlement following 17 years of litigation over mismanagement of federal lands held in trust for Native American people. But SDPB reporter Charles McElray found that in South Dakota, reactions to the settlement are mixed, and we'll talk with him in a few minutes, along with USDA Development State Director L.C. Meeks, to get more about the settlement. But first, this report.
On a crisp afternoon in the town of Redshirt, a small pack of free-roaming dogs frolic in a thin, crusty layer of snow. This isolated community is nestled in the badlands of the Pine Ridge Reservation. Some of the houses on the gravel streets are boarded up, but the home of Ben Goodbuffalo is warm inside. He knows what many on Pine Ridge will spend their share of the Cobell settlement on: heat.
And you know what the needs are today? Our houses are, look at this. This house has so many cold wind coming in that winter, the propane that we use is just gone.
Good Buffalo is one of thousands of Native American Trust landowners who could see a $1,000 check in the mail before the end of the year. More money may be coming in the second half of the settlement, the amount determined by individual land value. Federal officials in the Department of Interior, like Secretary Ken Salazar, call the finalization of the Cobell settlement an historic occasion.
This brings to an end years of contentious litigation that cast a dark cloud on the United States Department of Interior and on the nation-to-nation relationship with Indian country. With the settlement now final, we can open up a new chapter of progress and start a new era of trust administration.
As part of that new era of trust administration, Secretary Salazar announced major reforms to streamline regulations around the leasing of public lands. Part of the effort intends to free tribal people from red tape that made building homes and businesses very difficult. The reforms also streamline the process for renewable energy leases on tribal lands. Donald Del Lavador is the Principal Deputy Assistant Secretary with the Bureau of Indian Affairs. He says these changes came through consultation with tribal leaders from around the country.
I want to thank the many, many team members who spent countless hours in the department going over these regulations to make them better, with more specificity, and ultimately so that Indian people could get homes and businesses started in Indian country. The underlying principle was greater tribal self-determination, plain and simple.
But some critics say this settlement and these reforms fall short of the needed changes. Elizabeth Cook Lynn is a Crow Creek tribal member and a noted author and professor. As a tribal landowner, she stands to see a payout from the Cobell settlement. Cook Lynn applauds the effort of Eloise Cobell, who originally brought this lawsuit.
I do think that the Bureau needed to be jacked around and said, "You people are thieves and you're incompetent. And we're sick of putting up with your stupidity and your greed."
But in the end, Cooklin says this settlement and these new reforms do nothing to fix what she calls a corrupt system that puts the federal government in control of Native lands and undermines tribal nationhood and sovereignty.
Our trustee has over and over and over spent our money and stolen our land. This settlement changes nothing about that. Changes nothing about that.
Federal officials like Donald Lavrador contend that this effort to streamline and update Native trust regulations is a big step forward. Lavrador calls it a second wave of reforms, following up on the efforts to increase tribal sovereignty made during the 1970s. But he adds,
"I think there's still quite a ways to go. We've had 200-plus years of federal laws, statutes, and regulations governing many aspects of how Indians govern their own lives."
Back in the cold and windy town of Redshirt, Susanna Tubols is caring for her grandkids, who are playing on the wood floor in this one-bedroom track house.
"This one's four, I got a five-year-old, a 12-year-old."
While she shares in a general mistrust of the federal government here, Tubols says her share of the Cobell settlement will help. She plans to buy a cheap car so she can make the 60-mile trip to the Indian Health Service when her grandkids get sick.
Yeah, when it comes, it's just that dire need, you know, to at least upgrade your life a little bit momentarily.
The Cobell settlement comes after generations of Native American Trust landowners were left out of fair compensation for grazing fees and mineral rights. Federal officials say this is now changing. They insist more self-determination is on the way for tribal members. Trust landowners could see $1,000 before the holidays in the initial payout for the Cobell settlement. For many, like redshirt resident Susanna Tubols, who are struggling through another winter, this money won't last long. For South Dakota Public Broadcasting, I'm Charles Michael Ray in Rapid City.
And Charles Michael Ray joins us now. Mike, thanks for your time.
Thank you, Carl. Thanks for having me on.
And also with us is Elsie Meek. She's the USDA Rural Development State Director and an expert on economic development in Indian Country. Ms. Meeks, welcome back to Dakota Midday.
Thank you, and thank you for inviting me.
And if you're eligible to receive a settlement check, or if you're by chance an attorney in South Dakota who's followed the Cobell case over the last 17 years of litigation, you're welcome to call us at 800-524-3604. That number is 800-524-3604. You're also welcome to email the program at midday@sdpb.org. Ms. Meeks, maybe we can start with you. What is your overall opinion of the Cobell settlement and the changes announced by the federal government this week?
Well, I think it's a step in the right direction, but I actually want to start by also giving some recognition to Eloise Cobell, who worked on this case for so long, and Eloise and I go back for 20-some years, and of course, you know, then she passed away with cancer before it was completely settled. I mean, the appeals had taken place, and so... But her hard work all those years really needs to always be remembered. You know, I mean, it is a step in the right direction, and it was a recognition by the federal government that this had been mismanaged on their part. Changing the regs have always been a huge issue around leasing land or getting being able to get mortgages in Indian Country. And so, you know, it is a step in the right direction, but I have to say it's hard to unwind 200 years of systems and regulations that have worked in a certain way. So it's going to take a lot of leadership at the local level. And I know that, you know, the tribal leaders are very aware of this issue and this opportunity. But, you know, within the BIA, they're still the same employees that have been there for a long time. And so, you know, they're going to have to be pushed to change their attitudes towards allowing people to control their own land and to do the things with it that they need to do.
So do you agree with Interior Secretary Salazar that this opens up a new chapter of progress and a new era of trust?
Well, I think it opens up an opportunity for that. And again, I mean, I think also, as I said, it's going to take local leadership, elected leadership, tribal leadership on the ground to see that these changes actually happen in a way that makes sense for their reservation and to push the Bureau of Indian Affairs, you know, to make sure that they implement these in a way that safeguards the lands, but at the same time allows for people to get mortgages to build homes and to, you know, have that value of that land increase. I mean, we just heard about some land in Brown County bringing $13,000 an acre. You know, people can own land on reservations, but it never gains that kind of value, and it doesn't build assets for them because of the way it's held in trust. And so hopefully this can, we can get to a point where people can have some control over their own land and begin to build assets and ownership for themselves.
One thing maybe you can help clear up a little bit is this the idea of trust land, that Native landowners on tribal lands have a trust relationship with the federal government. How does that work?
Well, the United States government holds the land in trust. So they say, yes, you own a share in this piece of ground. You know, we don't know exactly which piece, you know, what area it is. But we will manage it for you. You know, if any income comes in, you know, we'll supposedly pass that on to you after we take our cut. And then any time they want to build a house or a business, that has to go through this whole clearance process with the BIA. And it's hard to obtain a mortgage. And, you know, of course, lenders are a little reluctant to make those loans because it's a tough process. I want to give you a real example is we started, and I'm from the Pine Ridge Reservation, as the listeners may know, but we started a nonprofit there to help people get into home ownership. And we had a self-help housing project, whereas people were building, helping each other build homes and putting sweat equity into it. And we had one young woman who was helping to build her own house and others, and there were three heirs on this land that she wanted to build on. It was her family's heir trust land. And everybody agreed in her family, you know, that they would give her this piece of ground and that we would build on it. She would build on it. And even it took us a year, you know, about a year to get the house built and all of the houses built. And she was ready to move in, and it took another year for the lease, the mortgage, to actually be perfected because, you know, between the Bureau and the other lenders, rural development, coming to an agreement about what that mortgage should look like, it was a two-year process. And that just should not be so. And so I would hope that this will help correct those sorts of issues.
Mike, this $1,000 is only the initial part of the settlement we're talking about. Is there, you know, there's a second phase of payouts expected in 2013. How will that work?
That's right. I spoke with some folks at the group called the Garden City Group, who is overseeing the payments of this $3.4 billion settlement, the payments going out to individuals. So this first phase of the payments is that those $1,000 checks that they say are supposed to be in the mail before Christmas. The second phase will also go to individual landowners, but that will depend on how much land individuals have and what that land is valued at. And then that payout will be based on those two things. And according to the officials, that could come out in 2013. So the native landowners out there who have trust lands could see more money coming as a result of this settlement.
Now, we've also been talking about some of the red tape that's being freed up as part of what the Department of the Interior announced. In a nutshell, Mike, what is it that they changed?
Well, that's kind of what Elsie Meeks was addressing just a little bit ago, the difficulties in putting up a building for a house or a business on a trust land. In other parts of the state of South Dakota, you know, entrepreneurship is you know, very supported by things like the Chamber of Commerce and others. If you want to put up a building to build a new business, it's celebrated and it's very easy to do. The amount of red tape that one has to go through on tribal lands to make this happen is just—it's really astonishing when you start to look at how much it takes to, say, put up a new building for a business. You have to go through way more hurdles in Indian country than you do elsewhere. And the idea here that the Department of Interior is announcing is reducing some of that red tape, reducing those hurdles, and streamlining the process in hopes of seeing more economic development. How this all works will kind of depend, and we're going to have to go back out as this is being implemented and talk to folks in Indian country about what they're seeing and how the changes are taking place. We'll talk with some native business entrepreneurs and others who are building homes in the future to see if this actually does what the feds say it's going to do.
Elsie Meeks,
and again,
yeah,
yes, I would just add and reiterate that, you know, I think hopefully, I don't know exactly what those reg changes will be, but I, you know, conceivably it will make it easier, but I absolutely know that it's going to be up to the tribal elected officials to really get these implemented in a way that makes sense. Because, as I said, I mean, it takes a long time to unwind these years of, you know, federal government officials doing it in a certain way.
If I could ask a question.
Yeah, go ahead, Mike.
If I could ask a question to Elsie, if that's all right. I'm curious. The issue of trust lands seems important here because obviously Native folks and Native nations want to maintain the land base. There is probably an effort to stop any kind of checkerboarding that could take place if individual landowners start selling off lands to non-Natives. What's the balance here? Is there a balance that needs to be set up to maintain tribal nationhood, tribal sovereignty, and also to maintain the land base, if you know what I'm getting at?
Sure, and there's definitely a balance, and tribal leaders are going to have to deal with that and grapple with that issue. But on the other hand, you know, if someone wants to build a home or start a business, you know, and there's individual heirship land that they could buy from their family members or they could lease, you know, making that work better, and it wouldn't have to pass out of tribal member ownership, but it would still could gain some value because it is being able to be used, it's being able to be owned outright. I think there's a balance. It's still going to be tough. I think there's still a ways to go on this. But, you know, I think tribal leaders are at this place where they want to deal with this and get it done right. So there's going to be a balance, and I would think that tribal leaders and tribal members as a whole, too, would not want to see any of the trust ground go out of tribal member ownership or the tribe's ownership. I mean, I as a tribal member wouldn't want to see that. But I still think that there's ways to streamline the mortgages so that banks can be comfortable and people can begin to build value on their land.
Well, Elsie Meeks, thanks so much for taking the time to join us on Dakota Midday. Really appreciate your comments on this issue.
Thank you.
Elsie Meeks is USDA Rural Development State Director. Also joining us was SDPB reporter Charles McElroy, and thanks for your time as well.
Thank you, Carl. Have a great day.
Coming up after a short break, Sioux Falls musician Jeremy Haig joins us in the studio. Jeremy and his brother John and their band are getting ready for this year's Holiday Jam concerts. I'm Carl Gerke, and you're listening to Dakota Midday on South Dakota Public Broadcasting.